offering our humble pranams at Bhagavan's lotus feet. Dear listeners, we welcome you to this week's episode of Shravanam, Mananam, Nididhyasanam, a series in which we study Bhagavan's discourses. The 1990 Samukosh series is the one we're going through. And as always, to join me in hosting the show, I have with me Brother Saiprakash. Saram Saiprakash.
Saram Prem.
And to even think of it, that one series of discourses, you know, there have been, I think, not less than about over 10 Samukosh series.
Correct.
Apart from that, there are other series which we have in our repository, a series of discourses on the Bhagavad Gita.
Correct.
Series, every year it happens during Dashara. Correct. As part of that. And you know, we've taken one series of constituting 16 discourses, and it's taken us more than 1.5 years.
Correct.
And even as we sit here and try to summarize these discourses, I think you'll be with me when I say that there is so much more to understand. I mean, even now when I go through these discourses, it strikes me that this point did not strike when we did the program then.
Very true. It's the same thing here. When I was going through this chapter on what is freedom, I'm amazed at, you know, the perspectives and the understanding that the same words give now. You know, after you have completed the entire cycle and you go back, and I'm really tempted to go back to the first discourse and start it all over again. But that's the beauty, I think.
In a sense, you working on the illustrations would be a good thing for you in that case, right?
Very true.
Go back to,
of course, we are still in the discourse, third discourse right now. But more or less, you know, everything is so clearly stated. It's just that you have to do it, man. That's it. There's nothing left to be said.
You know, and the power of these statements is something I think, in a sense, we have underrated. You know, even if you look at, you know, some people would say that spirituality is not marketable. It's not the in thing. People are not ready for it. Just a statistic. I don't know whether it really speaks of anything. But after we started the poster series, you know, the illustrations, we started sending them out every day with Science Bias.
Yes.
And we even posted on our Facebook page.
Yes.
I think our likes have gone up from 30,000 to 55,000.
Oh, is that right? That's good news.
And the only new thing which we have done in between is this poster series which we're posting every day. Of course, there are other series we're starting. But in a sense, you could attribute a lot of that popularity to this thing. Because, you know, we are able to depict
correct
Swami's message. And I think that is really ringing a tone with a lot of the youngsters.
It's amazing because, as you just rightly said, every statement has its own power. And when it, more or less, you know, we are presenting the visuals in a contemporary style. So when people relate to what they are seeing in the visuals and they see the message, it strikes a deep chord, I think.
Right.
That's what it is.
And I think, as you said, this, what is freedom is the discourse we are at, the 13th discourse. And maybe I'm going to go straight to the last few lines that Swami says in this discourse, which is very important, because Swami is saying that, you know, if Swami's words are not implicitly obeyed,
correct,
His grace, if it is obeyed, His grace is showered on you. And when you do not value those words,
correct,
why would I give my words to you?
That's true.
And in a sense, when you see, you know, these words are in front of us, these words are in our hands. But when you value it, when you feel that there is something more to it, I need to go deep into it. The more you dive deep, the more it reveals itself.
Well, in a sense, what we are going through is true Shravanam, Mananam, Nididhyasanam. I don't know about the Nididhyasanam part, but definitely Shravanam and Mananam, because looking back at this discourse, it reveals so many new things.
Right.
And as Bishu was just concluding the previous program, he kept saying 9-11. And it's so relevant in this topic today. What is freedom? So did they really have the freedom to go and crash the Twin Towers? I mean, here in one of the examples that Swami cites in this discourse, he says, if a person is hungry, does that give him the freedom and the right to go and steal?
Right.
Like you are oppressed, or you are disillusioned with society, or you are angry with society. So does that give you the freedom to go and attack somebody, to take life? I mean, that's so relevant in today's topic, because there is no action that is done without a strong reason. And as Professor Venkatraman always says, Everybody talks about terrorism, everybody talks of how bad it is, but what caused it in the first place? And in fact, he was wanting us to do a factual study, a scientific study,
mm-hmm.
of the influence of Bhagwan's water project on the Naxalite movement in Godavari district.
Mm-hmm.
He says there is a very clear correlation with the decrease in the number of Naxalites in Godavari district after Swami's water project has come, when compared to the adjacent Chhattisgarh, where the Naxalite movement is still very strong.
Right.
The moment people know that there's somebody caring for them, the moment people know that, yes, somebody has gone out of his way to help us, let us take to good ways, let us not harm anybody. I mean, that's the way it has inspired them. I think we should, at some point of time, do a scientific study and find out.
Right, absolutely. In fact, I think sometime back when we had Ganesh on the show,
mm-hmm.
that's what he shared about one of the people who is, I think, a convener of one of the samitis in Andhra Pradesh somewhere,
mm-hmm.
who was a Naxalite who transformed
and
became a devotee and is mm-hmm. now so actively involved. He was in prison for 2 years,
mm-hmm.
but his behavior in the prison warranted him to be released early
mm-hmm.
on account of good behavior. And then mm-hmm. he went on to become such an active member of the organization.
Right.
And now he's heading one of the samitis or one of the districts.
Correct.
And it is purely because of the fact that, you know, he was somebody who was able to come and give without seeking anything in return.
Mm.
I think that intention definitely does matter. And that is exactly how Swami starts this very discourse. You know, the first mm-hmm. one of the first things Swami does is he's defining spirituality.
Correct.
Where he's saying spirituality does not mean living in solitude.
Mm.
It consists of sowing the seeds of love in the hearts of all people
mm.
and facilitating the blossoming of peace and divine love among all mankind.
Correct.
And, you know, breaking that very idea that spirituality is not for the recluse mm. or the reclusive. It is for those who are here to bring harmony in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And juxtaposing that with what you said with 9/11,
mm.
no, it's absolutely absurd that in the name of religion we can have violence and we can justify it.
Correct.
Because here Swami is saying this is religion. Religion is, mm. you know. Later in this discourse, Swami makes that very beautiful point, I think, in this or the next one, where he says, talk to God.
Yeah, yeah. You know, that
converse with God, yeah, speak to God.
Yeah, I think it's in the next discourse.
Right. He's saying that is religion.
Mm.
And if you are constantly in touch with that God within, you know, there is no question of you going out and harming anybody else, because Swami would often say, you know, help ever, hurt never is the essence of all the scriptures of all religions.
Mm. To realize God is the foremost task in life. Man must realize God, feel God, see God and talk to God. This is realization. This is religion. It serves no purpose if one knows everything else but does not know God. I think Swami spoke this segment in English as well.
Right,
in the discourse.
This is one full sentence.
It is so beautiful and powerful.
Right.
Coming back, in this discourse of what is freedom, you know, there is a statement Swami makes in the third page. It says, freedom alone is spirituality. True freedom alone is spirituality. And to sum up this entire discourse in one sentence, I would say, nobody on earth can have true freedom. That's what it all boils down to. Freedom in the sense of the term, what we understand, is not actual freedom. He says, true freedom is possible only at the level of the heart or the hridayam. And that is the Atman. So, that is, I would say, the one-line summary of this entire discourse. But how that is that comes about, it's almost like a derivative. And Swami gives us so many different analogies and how we mistake what freedom actually is.
Right.
And says, no, you're mistaken. That's not true freedom. This is what true freedom is. So, I think we should go through. Before we just go through, you know, there's another segment I was just remembering.
Mm-hmm.
The previous discourse we have spoken about Atma, we have spoken about what our real nature is, and what is Atma, and what we should identify ourselves with. Now, going back to this conversations with Dr. Hislop, Sai Baba's conversation with Dr. Hislop. In that, Dr. Hislop asked Swami, he says, Swami, now, everybody is equal. All are equal. The Atma is in everybody. Then how do I live? What should I do? Okay. He says, see, you just because the same Atman is in all, you cannot go and treat your wife and your servant maid in the same way.
Mm-hmm.
He says, you cannot go and treat your wife and the servant maid in a practical, in a worldly point of view. You cannot do that. You cannot tell your wife is your servant maid or servant maid is your wife. You cannot do that. Then what should I do? He says, there you have to have the firm conviction that the same Atma is in all. The same Atma is in all. Okay. You know, at the core of the being, we are one and the same. But what is seen and what is reflected, each body does duties allotted to it as it is allotted to it. And very beautifully in the same book, although it is a slightly, diagonal to what I just mentioned, but I think it flows in the sense of the theme, where he says what is Sarvikalpa Samadhi and Nirvikalpa Samadhi.
Mm-hmm.
He says Sarvikalpa Samadhi is when you know the innate unity in the entire creation, you experience that innate unity, at the same time you are aware of your body.
Mm-hmm.
You are aware that you have put on a body, you are aware that you have put on the senses, you are aware that each one has put on their own bodies and their own senses, but we are one and the same. You experience that unity, but that is Sarvikalpa Samadhi. Then he says, Nirvikalpa Samadhi is when even the body becomes a burden.
Mm-hmm.
Mere existence becomes a burden. And you just want to merge back in that oneness. You want to remain in that state of oneness all through. You don't want to be limited by this body. So he says that anybody who attains the state of Nirvikalpa Samadhi cannot stay in that state for more than 21 days.
Right.
He says, even King Janaka, he says, gave up his body in the 14th day. I'm not sure of that, but it's there in the book. He says, Janaka gave up his body. He just walked into the forest because even existence becomes a burden.
Very interestingly, I think this is also mentioned by many of the saints in the recent times.
Mm-hmm.
Someone was telling me the life of Ramakrishna Paramahamsa also, he does that, you know.
Okay.
He is always very fond of food.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are many episodes in the life of Ramakrishna where he says, I want to eat fish.
Mm.
He sends the disciples to get fish for him. And there's a lesson in everything, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But there's always, he's portrayed as somebody who's childlike and, you know, he'll be sitting in a satsang.
Mm.
The moment he gets the aroma of food, he gets up and goes away.
Mm.
And that's how it's seen. And at one point, Sharda, Mother Sharda comes and tells him that, you know, why are you behaving like this?
Mm.
You know, what will your disciples think? You
mm-hmm.
teach them all high spirituality and you're so attached to food. And at that point, it seems Ramakrishna Paramahamsa says that I'm holding on to this desire for food so that I can stick to this body. And he says, the day when I refuse to take food, when you ask me, do you want to have food? And I say, no.
Mm.
Count 3 days from there, I'll leave my body.
Oh.
Because in a sense, you know, he is holding on to that desire to remain in that body. And when that desire is removed, there's nothing which is going to hold that soul
back
to that body.
Beautiful. I think even in the life of Yogi Ram Surat Kumar, who has an ashram in Tiruvannamalai, quite close to Ramana Ashram, he was a chain smoker.
Okay.
But he says, this is the only thing that binds me to this earth. This is the only thing that kind of, so it's very difficult, Nisargadatta Maharaj says, it's very difficult to understand the actions of a jnani. You cannot understand, in fact in the same discourse towards the end, Swami says, you cannot understand my actions, why I do this, who has the right to come and ask me why I have not spoken to him.
Right,
he says that in this discourse.
Right.
Like, he is always in that level of absolute freedom, I suppose. Swami is in that level of oneness, in that always. So he is asking, I am speaking to myself. Nobody else has the right to come and ask me that. So.
And I think that's exactly what Swami says in this, where he is saying that how we have confused freedom.
Mm-hmm.
Swami is saying that, you know, people think that if they're allowed to take up to a podium and speak what they want to speak, that is the freedom, the freedom of speech, or Swami will say political freedom. That's not freedom, that's what Swami says here.
Mm-hmm.
Because in every one of these, you know, if one person should be allowed to express his freedom, if we think of freedom of speech, then you have to restrict somebody who's going to come and hammer him and say that, no, you cannot do this because it's his freedom.
Correct.
So in a sense, there is always some amount of restriction, some amount of, if not, self-laid, it is being imposed by some authority. So there's always some amount of restriction or some amount of limitation to this freedom.
So here very clearly he says, but the truth is that no one has absolute freedom in the universe. So because he says you may go on, as you just said, you can go to a public platform. But why nobody has absolute freedom? Because you are bound by ideas. You are bound by what society imposes on you. And here Swami goes on to the next level where he says, you think you are free from foreign rule. But you are bound by your own rule. Your own government. Sometimes you wonder which is better.
So, interestingly, even the observers of politics, they would say that 1947 India got freedom. But the only thing which changed was, I think that the British withdrew. Otherwise, the entire setup was the same.
That's true.
You know, the whole bureaucracy was the same. The army was the same. It's just a transfer of power from external to internal. In that sense, really, you know, we give a lot of importance to that moment of freedom, the moment of independence. But in a sense, what Swami is saying is, you know, you have discarded the true freedom and you've kind of satisfied yourself with this, you know, superficial freedom.
That's true. True freedom springs forth from the level of the heart. And he says, what is this heart? What is meant by the heart? Not the physical heart full of flesh and blood. The real heart is that which has no connection with any particular place, time, individual or country. It is the divine principle which is equally present in all persons at all times, in all places, in all countries. This heart has no form. So basically he says, in I think somewhere here, he says, this heart is aham, this heart is I, and this is Atma.
Right.
So this Atma, which is equally present in all, he says, at that level there is true freedom. Because that, if you believe and experience your state to be that which is present in all living forms. And so obviously you are not bound by anything. You are not bound by your body, you are not bound by your senses. And he says only in that level you can experience true freedom. So, but there is a contradictory statement to even that, which we'll come to in this discourse, I think.
In a sense, if you look at it, Swami, especially this topic of Hridayam, where Swami speaks so much, he's saying it's universal, it is omnipresent and all that. You know, many times when we... when you take up any spiritual sadhana, you are sincere in some meditation or something, you to an extent get a certain amount of intuition. You know, you're able to read the other person's mind. You're able to see what is coming. Or sometimes when a person comes in front of you, you kind of assess that person much better than a normal person would.
Correct.
No, we always, you know, call this intuition or the ability to see something. But interestingly, many people say that it is nothing but you're actually... you know, making contact with that deep self, which is common with the other person.
Correct. Very
true. You are only seeing it from the point of view from that person, you know. Just like how you can see your own thoughts, and the more you connect to that deep person within, who is the common one in everybody, you become the witness of that person's thoughts too. But I think that is one of the reasons why Swami would often say, you know, whatever powers I have is nothing but purity.
Correct.
And when you say purity, it's nothing but selflessness.
Going beyond the mind.
Going beyond the mind, going beyond the idea that this body is what I am, this mind is what I am.
And then, that's what he says, that, you know, what is it knowing which you know everything? Right. Like, true freedom can be experienced only when you know the fundamental, the absolute truth of creation. And he gives that story of
Uddalaka and Shvetaketu.
In the Upanishad he says, have you learned that by knowing which you know everything? That's what the father asked the son. Then moving on from there, Swami says, so he says, when you call somebody and says, who is Ramaya? He says, I am Ramaya. But you say, no, that is the name given to the body. But that, who is that I? Now that I is common in everybody. I am Ramaya, I am Krishnaya, I am so, I am so, I am so. That I which is common in all is Atma, that is the Hridayam. That's what he says. Here is that interesting analogy of a painter. So he says, the substratum on which the entire creation is made is the Atman, or is the Hridayam. So he says, it's like a painter painting, you know, huge mountains and valleys on paper. Or like a painter painting a dancing girl. with bends and curves and the dancer dancing, but the paper remains flat. And there's no ups and downs or valleys and peaks on the paper. So he says that which remains unaffected, which is the basic substratum of all, is the Atman.
I think we've mentioned this before, but I'm always reminded of that very beautiful story with someone, one of the spiritual masters says, you know, there is this father who takes his son for a movie.
Yeah.
And, you know, explains to him what is a cinema. There is a white screen and light is projected onto it.
Mm-hmm.
And it gives him the whole description and takes him to the theater. But by the time they reach there, the movie has already started. And it's the scene of, you know, Gitopadesh, which is being shown in the thing.
Correct.
So the boy sits there and he starts asking his father, where is that white screen? Where is that white screen?
Mm-hmm.
So the father says, it's right in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
So he looks at it and he says, you mean Krishna? Is he the white screen?
Mm-hmm.
He said, no, look behind Krishna. So he says, that is it the chariot which is there?
Mm-hmm.
He says, no, what is behind the chariot? And this boy says, you mean the army, the rest of the army there?
Mm-hmm.
He says, no, see, behind the army and everything else.
Mm-hmm.
He says, you mean the horizon, the sky?
Mm-hmm.
The father says, you wait, I'll tell you. So they see the movie and the intermission comes, lights come on, and then the boy says, oh, there is the white screen. Okay, and then the father says, now you will never miss it.
Correct.
Once you see it, it can never be missed, because that's exactly what Swami is telling here. The other analogy which Swami is giving is that of silver being molded into different things. You know,
correct.
Swami says that there is a tumbler which is made of silver. I'm sure Swami would have been pointing to that tumbler on his table as he was giving that discourse. And Swami is saying that the time when you're able to effortlessly ignore or remove the idea of the name and form, what you will see is only the silver. And that is exactly what is the idea of trying to see that oneness in everybody. That's, I think, what Swami is saying here.
And then comes the beautiful point. He says, Ekam Sat Vipra Bodha Anti. He said, Ekam Sat, when there is no second, where is the question of freedom or bondage? So he says, in reality, if there is no second, if there is only one, then where is the question of freedom or bondage? You are, you just be. So he says, these are all from your own mind.
Right.
This whole concept of freedom or bondage comes from your own mind. In this context, you know, there's something interesting, because we always say pleasure and pain. We have this differentiation.
Right.
But bliss, which comes with the understanding and experiencing of reality and the unity in creation, is beyond pleasure and pain. That's quite different. That's a state quite different from pleasure and pain. So, in this sense, you know, different from freedom or bondage.
Right.
So, it is, the substratum is. Hopefully someday we'll have an experience of that.
Interestingly, before this, Swami makes one wonderful statement. He says, that which does not exist in the beginning and the end, but exists only in the middle, is considered to be really non-existent. Even in the middle also.
Correct. Mithya jagat.
Right. And you know, when he says that Ekam Sat is the truth, the ultimate truth is that, and that which is eternal is that. So what comes in between, where you say that freedom or no freedom, I'm in constraint, that is so trivial and so infinitesimal in that period of time that it is almost non-existent.
Correct.
And immediately the next statement, that's what Swami says, no freedom and bondage. There is no, in this context, there is no freedom, there is no bondage.
It's very interesting, because a slight digression from this topic, in the sense, like, sometimes you wonder, how did the sages know the Sukhanadi and all that? I mean, we think we have so much of free will and freedom to do something, but how do they know what is coming up for me? How do they know what I'm going to face? What this body is destined to? So, and I was just thinking about it. I think I was speaking to my father about it, and he said, what's so strange about it? Then he said, you look at a row of ants walking. You know when the ant is going to reach a water pool. You know when it's going to hit food. You know when it's going to face difficulties. That's it. That's how the sages are looking at us. And that's how Swami must be, or God, or our truest inner self must be thinking, why are you so worried and carried away? This is just one life in your million lifetimes. You're going to get hit somewhere, you're going to lose an arm, you're going to lose a leg. Why worry about it? That's
very, very true. You know, there was a little story which I think Arvind had shared on the mm-hmm. show.
Mm-hmm.
You're saying that there is this man who is a traveler,
mm-hmm.
and you know, he's a person who lives in that area, and mm-hmm. he sees this saint who's mm-hmm. come and he's sitting under a tree. So he goes and prostrates in front of him, and he says, "Master, where do you come from?"
Mm-hmm.
So this man says, "I'm coming from the Himalayas."
Mm-hmm.
So he looks around, he sees that there are no belongings with him. He's mm-hmm. just by himself.
Mm-hmm.
Then he's saying that you're traveling all the way from Himalayas, you don't have anything with you.
Mm-hmm.
You're not carrying any luggage. So that man looks at this man and says that, you know, you're also not carrying anything with you.
Mm-hmm.
So he says, no, my house is just nearby. I'm mm-hmm. just, you know, in transit. I just came here,
mm-hmm.
you know. And I'll go back to my house.
Mm-hmm.
My things are there in the house.
Mm-hmm.
You know, then the sage says, same here.
Correct.
I'm also in transit.
Mm.
I don't need any of these possessions because I have everything at home.
Beautiful.
You know, that idea of you are in transit, you're living through life, and you know, this is something which is momentary from where you're going to learn something, then the idea of pain and pleasure will change. It's not that you will completely get over it. But
you won't identify with it.
You won't identify it with the way you look at it will be completely different. The perspective changes completely. Mm.
Sometimes Swami would say they have this body's mother,
right.
And Swami would say this body went through this body went through that. I mean, what is that state of, you know, always in that state of Atman? So here he says, yes, we start giving importance to what is reflected and what is secondary, like we give importance to the moon in the absence of the sun.
Right.
So when the sun is there, we are not bothered about the moon. Similarly, when that awareness of the true Atman is missing, then you give importance to what is reflected in terms of body, senses,
right.
mind.
And Swami is saying that is why mind is given importance. Mm. And it is given importance till the point you start engaging yourself in Atma-vichara or self-inquiry.
Mm. So then he goes back to freedom and swechha. He says, what is true freedom? So if a man is feeling hungry, does he have the right to go and steal? Or is he bound by what the society has, you know? He cannot go and steal because he will be going against his conscience. So the voice inside says, you cannot go and take something which is not yours. So so again, he defines the word swecha. Swa plus icha, that is, swa is the Atman and what the Atman wants. So he says, in absolute terms, existence is only one. So the word freedom is again out of place in this context. So he says the Atman wants nothing. Swa plus Icha. So he says, but man's life today is regulated by man-made laws on one hand, and on the other hand, it's regulated by the limitations of the body, senses, mind, intellect, etc. So it's all a question of in which state of awareness you live. If you live in the awareness, constant awareness, integrated awareness that I am the Atman or I am the one who is present in all, then you're absolutely free. But the moment you step down from that, like Nisargadatta Maharaj said in one of his statements there, he says, an occasional thought comes and I observe it. He says, a thought comes or I allow it to come and I observe it. And he says, what is the difference between you and me? He says, just like you don't take, you don't bother about your respiration and your heartbeat and your digestion, I don't bother about my words and my actions. They just happen. I look at my actions. I hear my own, I hear the words which are spoken by this body. But I witness them. So that's
very true. You know, I think the Zichanakata Swami says about a sage who is living in a village.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's living all by himself and he's got a lot of reverence in that village.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly the girl in the neighborhood,
mm-hmm.
you know, she becomes pregnant.
Okay.
And she's an unwed young girl.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody pounds upon her and says that, you know, this is very unacceptable. Who's responsible for this?
Okay.
And the girl says that the sage next door.
Oh.
Okay, so the whole village goes and pounces on him and beats him up and they say, you're responsible for this girl.
Mm.
So he says, all right.
Mm.
So, you know, she'll have to live with you and you'll have to take care of the child. He says, all right, fine.
Mm.
So she comes and she eventually delivers the baby and the sage is looking after the baby.
Mm.
Then after a while, this girl starts feeling guilty and then she says, I'm really sorry, it's not the sage who's responsible. It is this, you know, boatman who keeps coming once in a while.
Mm.
So everybody go and catch the boatman and beat him and say that you're responsible. And they come back to the sage and say, we're very sorry that, you know, we're taking away this girl. You're not the one. He says, all right, you can take the child. It will, even to see calamity which falls on you and to see people coming and revering you at the same level, because when Swami keeps emphasizing that samatvam, you know, in the earlier discourse, Swami spoke so much about it. Because when you look at it, you know, when you say that Atma has nothing to bind, Atma has no desire. You know, when Swami defined love, Swami said the three qualities of selflessness, fearlessness and constancy.
Changelessness.
Yeah. You know, that is the attribute of the Atma too.
Correct.
So when at every action you are only expressing these three attributes, I think you're always in that state.
In fact, that is when
you will be in complete freedom.
That naturally leads to the next topic that Swami told. That's about surrender.
Right.
And he says, what is true surrender? See, the sage had true surrender. Because he says, equanimity is surrender. Equanimity. He says, some people say, I have surrendered, but then why am I having so many sufferings in my life? I surrendered to Swami. No, why is not looking at me? Why is not looking after my life? But surrender is, he says, equanimous. And then samadhi. He says, sama plus dhi. When you merge the mind into the Atma, that is samadhi. And he says it is equal-mindedness.
Swami says this, you know, true surrender never takes into cognizance the presence or absence of sorrow, suffering or misery and the like.
And the like, true.
But it's a you know, very telling statement, because all of us do that, you know. We say, I was devoted to Swami, I have love for Swami and still this is happening. I did so much for Swami, still this is happening. You know, we all get into that loop without realizing that it has no place. You cannot mention these two things in the same sentence, because it's totally meaningless. Because Swami saying surrender means you accept everything that comes from Swami as prasadam.
Everything that happens is good for me.
Right.
That's another
thing. No, we actually did this kind of discussion within ourselves. You know, when you're students, we always see Swami materializing objects and Swami giving watches and chains. We one day were sitting and discussing, see, Swami gives a chain. Okay, and we see that somebody gets a thicker chain, somebody's pattern is very new, and something is more intricate. We just thought to ourselves that if Swami were to come to me and materialize something, and it happens to be a black thread, we'd say a very, very, you know, nothing great about the stone which is independent, something like that, will we be absolutely as happy as you would have given us a beautiful gold chain with a diamond pendant? And when we looked at it and very honestly thought, that actually we will not be the same level of happiness, which only means that that is the amount of the importance we give to what comes from Swami. And when Swami says, if you say that I've totally surrendered, if you say that you're in complete love with me, whatever comes from my hand will be equally acceptable to you, whether it's sorrow or pleasure. The very fact that we're saying that, why are you giving this to me? It means that you're choosy about what comes from his hand, what comes to you as his blessing.
Correct. In fact, slight digression again. You know, Swami was coming off from Vrindavan, I think when we were in our second year or third year undergraduate. Swami was coming off from Vrindavan, you know, it was a sudden decision. And so there was a lot of prayer, Swami, please stay back. Swami, why are you going? And to the point where we really irritated Swami. And Swami was almost, you know, he was certain boys who were trying to stop his path. He just pushed them up. He said, move. If you don't move, I'll send you out. So he was very stern, and then suddenly people realized that Swami is very upset about us trying to stop him from going to Parthi. But we had no real, we were also trying to do it out of love. We didn't know why Swami was going. But the whole thing is, we should have accepted. But we did our bit, and so the boys who were actually kind of, you know, physically brushed aside by Swami, they were really weeping, because, you know, Swami has pushed me. I said, you know, you go into a deeper connotation and you start worrying. But the beauty is, those boys Swami selected for the Kodai trip that year. Like,
very, very beautiful. Imagine the state of mind of those who would have observed that.
Yeah.
Because immediately, that day when these boys were feeling bad that they were, you know, given this treatment by Swami, now it becomes a longing. Oh, how I wish Swami would have done that to me, because I would have been part of that. Could I really?
You know, because looking back at it, I very clearly remember the boys who were, you know, kind of brushed aside by Bhagwan, and Swami picked them up for that. You see, this is just our imagination correlation, but it happened. And so, whatever with God, I mean, yes, with Swami we had that opportunity to directly experience His wrath or His love or His grace or His, you know, admonition, so anything. But I think we have to be open about life itself and take everything that comes to us in life as something being given by Swami.
No, even as you're narrating that, how what was unacceptable suddenly becomes acceptable, you know, when Swami does something. You reminded Ithims once Swami came out into the portico, and Swami started distributing His robes. And at random, He was just throwing it to some boys. And I think there were limited number of robes, not enough for all the students. So Swami very randomly just threw, there was one boy who was standing right at the end of the corridor, and Swami threw all the way from the interview room to the other end of the corridor, straight to one boy. So very, pinpointedly, Swami was giving to certain boys. And that evening, the situation in the hostel was quite bad. Because half of the hostel had got and half had not got. So the boys who had not got went and told the warden, sir, please ask Swami on our behalf. We would also love to have a robe of Swami. So the next day, warden had the opportunity to go inside the interview room, and he said, Swami, the boys have not got are feeling very bad. Then Swami said, you go and tell the boys that all those who have got robes will not stay with Swami.
Oh.
They'll all finish their studies and leave. All those who have not got robes, they will stay back. Okay? And Swami said, go and tell the boys. So it has become a message he had to go and tell boys. In the moment this was conveyed to the boys, those who got started weeping and those who did not get were happy.
Interesting.
And interestingly, when this was narrated to us, there were two alumni who were there narrating this to us. Both of them settled in Parthi. Because not in the ashram, they're having their profession set up outside. Both of them settled in Parthi. One got the rope, one did not get the rope. But you know, in a sense of bringing that equanimity, like, you know that you can be blessed even when you're not given.
That's the point.
You know, you could misuse the opportunity even when it is given.
You know,
that is
here,
something that's so obvious.
Here again, very beautifully, the concept of self-confidence comes in. You know, when you are being ignored by Bhagwan, when you are not being seen, when He avoids you, you should still have that self-confidence that, no, He loves me. And then He's there for me. And then He's always loving towards me. So that self-confidence, I think, is also equally important.
Very true. I think that is what will lead to the higher understanding of Swami's love itself. You know, when you realize that even when He's not looking at you, even when He's shouting at you, He's loving, then the understanding of Swami's love actually becomes higher.
Very
you
true.
Realize that it's not love only when, you know, it comes to your rescue when you're in pain or when you're in need, He comes and gives something. That alone is not His love.
Correct. Getting back to freedom, Swami says, here's a very subtle point. He says, yes, you don't have freedom to do this, you don't have freedom, you're bound by this, you're bound by that. Then He says, what about somebody trying to give something to somebody? You know, I'm serving. I'm such a noble soul. I'm serving you. I'm giving you a gift. I'm giving charity. He says, you are bound under the sattva guna of yours. Even that is bound. That is also a binding.
Right.
You are bound by gunas. He says, sattva, rajas, tamas. Suppose you go and you get angry at somebody. Then you are under the influence of rajas. So, he says, even the desire to give is a binding on you.
Right.
It's not a freedom.
But interestingly, the moment you say this point, one might wonder then, what is the point of doing good then? What is the point of doing charity?
Correct.
And I think the perfect example for that is the example of King Bali, which is celebrated Onam sometime back. Because, you know, he had this compulsion.
Yes.
That once he said, I will give in charity, he could not step back. And that's why even when Shukracharya comes and tells him, his guru comes and tells him that, you know, he is no ordinary Brahmin. Don't do the mistake. He says, no, I have given my word. I have promised to give and I never refuse when I give. So he has asked me, I have to give. You know, there it was his sattvic nature which God utilized.
Correct.
And that is
to
what
crushes
right,
ego.
Crushes ego. Because Swami says, I think in the discourse which we used on Onam Day, Swami says that, you know, he had ahankara. That cannot be denied. But he had other good qualities.
Mm.
So God looked at those good qualities, used those good qualities to transform and sublimate his nature.
Correct. So he says, when man does something for the sake of his personal benefit, it signifies only his desire for that thing. So, you know, as long as you're bound by desire or fear, you are not free. That's what it boils down.
One sentence Swami puts it, saying that as long as the mind is there, no one can claim to be enjoying freedom.
Correct.
Because I think that's what, so it again comes to that, because where there is mind, there is desire.
Mm.
And as long as you have desires, you're being bound and motivated by those desires.
Mm.
Every action is inspired by them, and there cannot be any freedom.
So he says, everything is in you. Like as he says, the spirit, the Atman is in you, and the power of the entire creation is in you. What you have to do, what is sadhana, he says, is removal of what is not you. Removal of the ignorance which makes you believe that you are this body, the mind, the senses. That is what has to be removed. And that is sadhana. And to emphasize this point, he gives this beautiful story of what Krishna tells Arjuna. He says, don't think Dronacharya taught you archery.
Right.
It's already in you. He just brought it out. He made you express what is already in you. The concept of educare that Swami says, bringing out from within what is already inside.
Right. And Swami gives this example. If suppose you're digging a well and you reach about 100 feet and then you strike a good spring and there's copious amount of water which is coming.
Correct.
Have you created water or brought it from somewhere?
Correct.
No, water that was there all the while. Mm. It came to view because the earth was hiding it. The earth that was hiding it was removed.
Removed. Correct.
And I think in the next discourse, Swami uses a similar line of thought for explaining bliss.
Mm-hmm.
Swami says, if you have a pot with many holes, and if you fill it with sweetened milk or payasam.
Correct.
You know, what comes out from the different holes is the same payasam.
Correct.
So Swami says, the Atmanandam is always there. In certain activities which you undertake, it comes out as happiness or pleasure. But you are so obsessed with that activity, or you know, it is like being obsessed with that hole and forgetting that it's the same happiness which is inside which is coming out.
True. And then this point is again very subtle, where he says, you think a student has the freedom to ask a question to a teacher. Now the teacher is teaching in the class and the student asks a question. You think he is free to ask a question. But Swami says, no, that's the duty of a student to ask questions.
Right.
And it comes under the purview of his dharma, of his duty. Now he goes on to define what are the three categories of duties.
Right.
So he says, sambandham, nirbandham and kartavyam. Sambandham is relationship, nirbandham is compulsion and kartavyam is obligation.
Or duty.
And those three beautiful stories, you know, situations that Swami gives,
right.
I think quickly we'll go through.
Right.
Sambandham is, he says, you've called your friends for a tea party and you're held up with some other work. So he says, you just call up and say, please, I want to postpone it, I'm not having it today. That is sambandham or relationship. So it's a voluntary and an optional thing.
Right.
But he says, nirbandham is when you go to the office.
You're having a splitting headache and there's a meeting next day.
Yeah. And you have to still go. This Swami is compulsion.
You go to the doctor, take a shot and then you try to go.
You have to go. That is nirbandham, compulsion.
Right.
And the most interesting one is kartavyam or obligation.
Right.
He says the husband and the wife have fought and they are not talking to each other. And suddenly the friend of the husband comes and says, hi, hello, how are you? And then the husband has to respond. And then he goes inside and he is not speaking nicely to his wife, but he says, my friend has come, get some tea. And then he comes out and says, oh, so when did you come? So
it's and then Swami says how in front of the friend, the husband and wife, though they have just had a fight,
correct.
They have to pretend as if everything is, you know, fine between them.
Correct.
So Swami is saying that is because of the, you know, the kartavyam which is there. You're bound by that. You're bound by the norms of the society. And
and then comes the bumper statement, which I think is one of the most powerful statements in the series as I look at it. He says, nowadays people in general have given the go-by to all these three, sambandham, nirbandham and kartavyam. Hence, there is dharma glani. That is all-round decline of righteousness in modern society.
Right.
So he says, the three kinds of duties that you have, when man gives that up, that is the decline of dharma.
very beautiful, because the first one which Swami said, Nirbandham, I think Sambandham, where you were studying that you call friends and you're able to say no.
Call it off.
Right. Mm. Swami is actually talking about where you have a certain amount of freedom to choose.
Correct.
I think that point Swami is talking about prioritizing. Mm-hmm. Where you have a choice and you have, when you have the ability to say no, you have to say no to, for the right things.
Okay.
Because that is also one thing. You know, one thing is we are not following what we're supposed to follow in the family, let's say the discipline in the family or discipline in the society.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, when you talk of peer pressure, Swami says that it is something which does not bind you. You are mentally getting bound by it, but there is no binding factor there. Mm-hmm. If you prioritize yourself, you'll know when to say no.
Correct.
That's why Swami is saying that that is a case of sambandham.
Mm-hmm.
Which relationship you give more importance to?
Correct.
At any given point, what is more important to you, and then say, choose.
Choose between that, prioritize.
So Swami is saying that is also lacking.
Mm.
Nirbandham, or where you have to do what you have to do.
Mm.
Typically, Swami is taking the example of a office situation.
Correct.
You know, because people are not, that self-sincerity is something which is lacking. You know, self-commitment is what is lacking.
Mm-hmm.
And then Swami is saying kartavyam, within the family. What the father has to do to a son, what the son has to do to a father. When that is lacking, I mean, as you said, in one sentence, Swami is summing up the entire situation in the world today.
Correct. Degrees of freedom is different. it's just like solid, liquid and gaseous state.
Right.
So they have different degrees of freedom. Then he goes on to this beautiful thing of Salokyam, Samipyam, Sarupyam and Sarujyam.
Right.
Sayujyam. Salokyam is thinking of God and living in
spiritual world, or
in the spiritual world or God's world. Samipyam is moving closer to God. Sarupyam is becoming one like God. And Sayujyam is the final merging. So, I think it is all, what Swami is saying is, these four states come into play when you are still aware or bound by the external. Because what is merging into God is merging into yourself. You merging into yourself.
Right.
Basically, you merging into yourself at the state of the ultimate truth. But in practical terms, when you grow to it.
Right.
When you experience it. Then he says, again he says, there's no true freedom. There's only ahamkara swatantram and abhimana swatantram.
That's a very beautiful point. Swami is saying that freedom of the ego.
Yes.
Because the problem is, as somebody beautifully pointed out, whenever we're talking about freedom, we're only talking about this freedom of the ego. I want to do what I want. We are just saying that I is that ego. It's not the true I, and that's where all the confusion comes.
Correct. And then he says, ahankara and abhimana. You think you have the right over your wife, your children, so you can scold, you can beat them. You don't have right over anybody. So basically you are trying to put somebody else's freedom down and trying to exercise your freedom.
Right.
So how can that be true freedom?
Swami says that if you want to enhance your freedom by suppressing the freedom of others, it is utterly selfishness only.
Correct.
True freedom lies in not interfering with the freedom of others.
Correct.
You do not find such freedom in this world. What you find in this world is a hierarchy of controls.
Correct.
The one at the higher level controlling the one at the lower level. In the sense, what Swami is saying is, when you say that I want freedom, we are only thinking of going higher in that hierarchy.
That's the point.
We are not thinking of releasing ourselves from the hierarchy, but we are saying the higher I am in the hierarchy, the more freedom I'll have.
I think I'll have more freedom.
Right.
Mm.
I think somebody had done a classical study on, I think the senators in the Senate or something like that, where there is this clear hierarchy.
Okay.
Where each one is, you know, there is a clear demarcation of the different levels in that.
Mm.
And how everybody strives to go to the highest level within that Senate or that Congress.
Okay.
Thinking that the higher you are, the lesser number of people will boss over you.
Mm-hmm.
And in a sense, I think that's what Swami is saying. It's a very beautiful and subtle point. Swami is saying that all the while, all the time we are trying to do is go higher in that hierarchy so that we'll have less people to control us, which is equal to more freedom.
In that sense, if you just think of the Prime Minister of the country, what freedom does he have?
No, that's exactly the point, because as you go higher in the hierarchy, if you look at it, what Swami says is kartavyam and nirbandham actually increases.
Correct, correct.
Your responsibility increases. So when you go higher in the hierarchy, there are no external influences, but that position itself comes with a lot of, you know, gravity, which will pull you down and which you cannot do many things. Because, I mean, even imagine you become a celebrity.
Mm.
What freedom do you have?
Correct.
You know, the basic freedoms that you've enjoyed all your life will be snatched away from you the moment you become popular.
Then again, he says, anybody who is born in on earth cannot have freedom. And the next point is very beautiful. He says, if you tell me that all are one, how is it that even the person who hates me is me? How is it that there's somebody who hates me? He says, all these differences are created only in the mind.
Right.
So he says, just like the sugar is the substratum for all the sugar dolls, it be animals or birds, whatever dolls are made of sugar. The sugar is a substratum. Just like that, God is common in everything.
And Swami says that differences are created by the mind and they have nothing to do with the heart. And I think earlier also in this discourse, Swami spoke so much about, you know, the heart being universal, and that is where true freedom arises from.
And then he goes on to give analogy of the avatars. He says, God has no likes and dislikes. He pretends, in fact, this is very beautiful, because he says, he pretends to answer your prayers. See, he says, God does not have thoughts and feelings of any kinds, but he appears to respond. He appears to respond suitably according to the thoughts, feelings, attitudes and actions like worship, prayer, etc. of the devotees. He has no likes and dislikes. He is not angry or pleased. He is in that state of oneness all the time. Well, it's, I would say, your worship, your puja, your, you know, adoration of God, after a particular level of purifying the mind, it becomes redundant.
Right.
Because you have to start feeling one with God. And the more and more you start worshipping Him, then you're still creating a barrier.
Right.
So that's what Swami says, that He encourages so that you get over it soon. Right. And then go towards that state of oneness.
In a sense, you could say that that's the state of mananam, actually.
Correct.
You take note of God's love, but you start ruminating over that. That is the beginning of you seeing the, you know, the nuances of that love, the nuances of that grace. Before you start seeing the oneness, I think the understanding that whatever happens is good, whatever God does is good for you, that samatvam comes from there.
In fact, he really very clearly mentions it here in a quite revealing way, in the sense, he says, people think that doing bhajans, worship, devotional singing, meditation are all signs of spirituality, but all these are mental aberrations and serve to give only mental satisfaction to the practitioners. You praise God saying, Lord, you are my mother, my father, my friend, and so on. But why all this mumbo jumbo or gibberish? Why not simply say, you are I am you? Then he goes on to say, it's not even you or I, we and we are one. He says, even that we and we are one is different, because we signifies the body and the Atma. So he says, finally understand this concept of what is the body and what is the Atma. Then there is already unity. There is no question of you and I, we and we, all these are words. So he says, finally, true freedom is only the state of the heart. And he says, you should visualize and realize the unity of the body and the hridayam or the atma. This is the one sadhana you should practice. Spirituality means merger with God. He says, if you are firmly established in this faith, you need not undertake any other sadhana or spiritual practices. So then the beautiful story, of course.
Yeah. Right, of course. Swami is saying that, you know, you repeat certain things, but you have no faith in that, or you don't have the complete understanding of it. For that beautiful story which Swami says, that there is this man who gets the mantra Shivoham from his guru, and goes on repeating it, Shivoham, Shivoham, and man comes by and says, what do you mean by Shivoham? He says, I am Shiva. And then the friend asks him, so if you are Shiva, what is Parvati in relation to you? And he says, oh, abaddham, abaddham. Swami says that so beautifully, and he says, oh God, what have I done? He says, no, I am not Shiva then.
Then Swami says, if you have really understood and gone into the depth, you would say that I am Parvati too.
Right.
I am Parvati too. I am the one who is become many. So then he says, in fact, this is a very interesting point. He says, These are the kind of complications that could come when you start worshipping God as father, mother, friend, this, that.
Right.
He says you attribute a status to God and you the status becomes more important to you than God himself. In a way, that's what is happening.
Very true. I mean, in the sense, you are thinking of Shivoham, I and God are one. That relation you have dissolved.
Yeah.
If you and God are one, we have not reached the understanding that God and Shiva and Parvati are one.
Are one. That's the point. So that's what he says. So the you limit yourself to the understanding, no, he is my mother, he is my father, he is God is my this, God is my that, God is my friend. So he says, just break all that.
Right. And then of course, Swami goes on to say this, you know, all the complications will arise if you think of God in terms of worldly relationships. And then Swami is saying that, you know, the true freedom inherent you is, I am you, you are I, we are not two but one.
But one.
That is the true freedom. And in a sense, Swami is saying it's already there.
Correct.
You just have to discover it.
And then this Swadharma and Paradharma,
right, very beautiful
in the Gita, I don't know whether we have to rush through it or maybe we can just mention it here.
Right.
Swadharma is dharma of the Atma and Paradharma is dharma of the body.
The body.
And Paradharma is what binds you in the world and what you have to act. But you have to act with the understanding of Swadharma.
Right.
So, you know, how often when you are you know, busy eating a gulab jamun, you are thinking, I am not this body. Or how often when you are doing something which you like or hate for that matter, are you aware that this body is what is going through and I am just witnessing it? It's not so easy.
In this Swadharma and Paradharma, I think one Swami had told this, shared by one of our seniors, he was saying, the Swami would say, Paradharma is like carrying 100 1 rupee coins. Okay, Swami says, come and give me those 100 1 rupee coins, I'll give you a 100 rupee note. That is Swadharma.
Oh, okay.
So Swami is saying, in the practice of Swadharma, you don't compromise Paradharma. It is just that to handle Paradharma becomes so much more easier. You know, if you're carrying 100 1 rupee coins, to care for those 100 1 rupee coins, not to lose, you know, 100 times more careful, Swami is saying, I'll give you 100 rupee note. So if you are there to satisfy that Swadharma, the Paradharma or the bodily or the relationship based dharmas are automatically taken care of.
Very true. In fact, you know, just thinking of it, what comes to my mind is, that's somehow a kind of explanation for what we do not understand, the uncertainty principle in Swami's actions. See, because when Swami does, like Swami is giving something to somebody, Swami is throwing these chocolates, you know, a birthday boy comes with a, but you go and throw chocolates, the people throw chappals back at you, slippers back at you. Why? Because he is doing it from a totally different level. He's already always doing it from the level of the Swadharma, I think. And it's not, that is guiding his Paradharma. Whatever his body is doing, whatever he is doing in the world, is always in tune with that feeling of oneness.
I'm reminded of a very hilarious interaction which happened. It's not even hilarious, audacious interaction which happened between a student and Swami. You know, there was this student, a classmate of mine, Swami had called him for an interview, and Swami was going on telling him that you go, you know, take up a job outside because your parents want you to stay with them. They want you to get married and settled in life. And this boy was going on saying, no, Swami, I don't want to get married. I want to stay with Swami. So Swami was going on convincing him. So finally he said, in his own words, he used a Brahmastra. He said, Swami, you say that we have to follow whatever you do. Okay, so you have chosen not to marry, so I also want remain unmarried.
Oh.
You know, quite an audacious thing to say. But what Swami told was very beautiful in response to that. Swami said, Chudu, see Swami. Swami treated everybody equally. I called my own mother as Grihamamai. I called my own father as Grihamabai. Because I treated everybody equally. So I have the right to remain like this. You can follow this trait of me if you are in this equality of mine. It was so beautifully because Swami is saying that all the time, Swami said, I put on these relationships. I put on, Swami says that, you know, Kshatriya Raju.
Yeah.
That's something which God has adorned himself with. And he does not associate himself with that.
Nor is he bound by it.
Not bound by it.
That's it. I think while we think we have the freedom to go on, we are running out of time. And
And really, we thought we had the freedom to do two discourses this week, but
this is I think the biggest discourse in the series.
Biggest discourse in that series.
And the Swami mentioned somewhere that based on the discussion that they had,
right.
I think there was a panel discussion
exactly,
that
to think of this being a spontaneous discourse.
Mm.
Not that any of the other discourses of Swami are
planned
or.
But it was in response to the
debate which happened
about freedom.
Right.
And he says so and so said this, so and so said, they have the freedom to move around and wave a stick. But is that true freedom? And you say that animal that is tied with a rope, it has freedom for 10 feet. But is that real freedom? It's still tied. Its head is held with that. So I think we should continue the last portion of this discourse in the next week.
Right. So dear listeners, we'll conclude this episode of Shravana Mananam Nididhyasanam, where we're doing the summary of these discourses. We'll get back to you next week, same time, 7:30 on Thursday Live for hopefully the concluding episode of the summary of these discourses. Thank you for being with us. On behalf of Sar Prakash, I offer this humble effort of ours at Swami's Lotus Feet. In a short while from now, you'll be joined by Bishu for the last segment of the day, Outside, Inside, Deep Inside. Stay tuned. Thank you. Jai Sai Ram.